Hey guys, welcome back to the Marriage Savvy Podcast, where being savvy about your marriage could help you not get finessed by it. I'm your co-host, John Bautista, and today we're going to be talking about fights, or what we call ruptures. What is a rupture? Kim's going to help us identify and define that, but then also talk about little ruptures and how they can really add up, and then large ruptures when they can be really explosive and really define the relationship. You don't want to miss it coming up on today's show. The Marriage Savvy Podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be used to diagnose, treat, or act as medical advice. Always seek the advice of your primary care physician, mental health professional, or qualified healthcare provider for any questions you may have regarding a medical condition and/or mental illness. Hey, Cam, welcome back to the show.
Hey, John, and welcome back to Dallas, right?
Yeah, welcome back to Dallas.
Yay.
And Texas. Well, cool. Well, thanks for joining us. I'm so glad to see that you're in Texas, and you know, you're about 30, 40 minutes away from me, so I feel closer to you. How about that?
All right, yeah. We're it's good.
Yeah. Well, what I wanted to do was introduce the topic for today. Something that we wanted to bring to the table was this idea of ruptures. I don't think people have had that kind of language before in the past. They just considered them fights. Like, yep. When I grew up, everyone just knew them as a fight. Oh, it was a fight.
That's right. I mean, we talk a lot, and I talk a lot on here about rupture and repair. You know, relationship. I've said this so many times. I even think it's written, I think it's on the slideshow in the waiting room at the office, but it's like relationship is a constant dance of togetherness, rupture, distance, repair. And then we just do the dance again.
Yeah.
So, but what is a rupture really? Because I think rupture is like a big word, like rupture, you know,
right.
torn apart makes me think of, right?
Yeah. Something exploded.
Something exploded. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so when, and sometimes it is that, right? Like an affair, that would be a huge betrayal, right? Mm-hmm. But I think most, and I've said this before too, most relationships die the death of 1,000 paper cuts rather than a big rupture. And so I kind of wanted to talk a little bit about what is a rupture, and then we can spend some time, if we have time, talking about repair. I'm sure if we don't tonight, we'll definitely get into repair. But
for sure, yeah. And it'd be super helpful to define that. Once again, because all I've known is fight, but there's a lot of things that are going on even in the midst of an argument or a disconnection. So yeah, what is a rupture?
A rupture is anything that is going on in the relationship that breaks trust or intimacy. Mm. So sometimes, I mean, my husband and I can fight and it's not a rupture.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's a squabble, or it's we're irritable and we're tired, or
yeah,
you know, like one of us backing into the RV site. I think we had a story about that one, you know. And those are just I was tired, I was hungry, and, you know, wasn't feeling great that day, whatever. And so those, I mean, it can turn into a rupture depending on how you handle the heat of the moment, right? But rupture is when your partner, you or your partner, is experiencing a break in trust or intimacy. And if you let that go unrepaired, that is where we get ourselves in some big trouble. Hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, breaking down those two aspects of the rupture, it's a break in trust and a break in intimacy. So it's a break in, I feel safe with you, and I also feel emotionally connected and close to you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel, like you said, safe, or I feel like you've got my back. Like, we may disagree, but you like me. Mm. We may disagree, but you love me. You want to, we're in this together.
Yeah.
Right. And so let's talk about, like, what are some smaller ruptures? We talk about, you know, like I said, the big ones are the big R and the little R's. Big rupture is, you know, obviously we think about an emotional or physical affair. That's huge.
Right? Yeah.
That's huge. And those are often harder to ignore because they're so big and so painful. I'm still surprised at how many people don't repair those or don't repair them very well. Mm-hmm. But it's the little R's that go unrepaired. So little ruptures, ideas, broken agreements.
Broken agreements.
So yes, so when someone is expecting something, you've got roles and responsibilities. So broken agreements, right? Like I take care of the grocery shopping and I cook dinner, it's your job to clean it up. If you're not doing that, or you're leaving it for me, or you've got some reason not to all the time, I would call that a broken agreement. And if that's not handled well, responsibly, that's going to add up. You're going to pay for that later. Another type of small rupture, and depending on what the topic is how big it is actually. But when you make a unilateral decision, you or your partner makes a unilateral decision on something one or you both felt like you should have had a say in. So for example, I decide I'm going to go buy a new car. I come home, my husband's at home, and I drive up in my new car. That would be a rupture in my house.
Yeah.
And understandably so, right? Because that's a huge purchase and he didn't get a say in that. So even unilateral decisions in small ways, like I'll never forget. I had a client one time who retired and didn't tell his wife he was going to retire.
Whoa.
He just walked in and turned in his severance. She felt hugely betrayed by that because she expected that would be a conversation that they would have.
Right. Like their financial security is like on both of them, not just on one person.
That or it's just a life change. Like these people were actually very financially secure. That money wasn't going to be a problem for them. But that's still a big life decision, and that broke her feeling of trust in that I'm the person you're going to discuss that kind of thing with. In his head, it was all logic. Well, we're fine. Just like you said, financially, we're fine. What do you care?
Oh, that's
what do you care? Because, we have plenty of money. So what does it matter if I'm retired or not? Well, it matters because we have a sense of the way our relationship is managed and that we will discuss things. And then you just made a decision.
Yeah. I think a lot of couples may not be able to set the expectation early on. And then by the time that they realize their expectations weren't met, they realize they haven't discussed it to begin with.
Yeah.
So we have broken agreements, and then we also have unilateral decisions. Mm-hmm. What else?
Another one that I think about off the top of my head is forgetting special events. That creates a level of mistrust in that what's important to me is important to you. And not that it should be every time, but, if you've never remembering anniversaries or birthdays or, special holidays or whatever to the family, then you're telling somebody they can't depend on you. And another one that brings about to my mind is I'm trying to get as minute as I can in these, as small as possible, so that people get really clear on what can rupture in a relationship. Like it's not all just the big things, right? And another thing is like even being there for kids' events.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So if you're always having to work or cutting out early, or I just don't want to be there, or I don't want to show up for that, that can break feelings of safety and trust.
Yeah. It's like the thing that we're creating and building and we spent all these years getting to, like, why don't you care about it? Because the way that it's coming across is that if you don't, like, you don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. And something near and dear to my heart because of my marriage, I've talked about here a few times, but people don't talk enough about it. Why it's so hard in some marriages when there's neurodivergence. And so my husband's ADHD, really, really badly ADHD. And so that is a constant struggle of managing disappointments and missed appointments. And, yeah. You know, that's something he and I've had to learn to walk.
Can you define neurodivergence for people that are listening and maybe not have heard that word before?
Yeah. So it is just a brain that works differently. Right. And so you've got two people together, one who is, for example, OCD is a neurodivergence. It's, you know, diverting from the norm of mm-hmm. brain function. And so you have to learn how to manage these things when you're a couple. And so if one is ADHD, then the person who's not ADHD can have a hard time understanding and being patient with mm-hmm. what that can require.
Yeah. Right?
And so those are the little ruptures that can add up into really big problems in a relationship, because it creates an insecurity in the emotional life of the couple.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Do you feel like, or do you sense that early on in your marriage, you were very empathetic to John's ADHD, or do you feel like that came with some experience of ruptures in some sense?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, I don't think I had a lot of empathy for it in the beginning, because I didn't know he was ADHD and he didn't either.
Oh, okay.
So it's only newly something you hear about adults being diagnosed with ADHD. I mean, even our kids weren't being diagnosed when John and I got married. I mean, we're like, what is that? You know, not, that wasn't a thing like it is now. I've been married 35 years, so been around a while. But I didn't, even when I knew what ADHD was, it can present differently in adults. And so no. I didn't dawn on me that my husband was ADHD. I just thought he was forgetful.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I just thought he was very forgetful, you know? Yeah. And so I wasn't patient. I mean, I would have moments where I'd be like just annoyed. And then I'd have times where I was really like angry.
Yeah, I bet.
Angry at him a lot. So yeah, that's a whole nother story of how John and Kim manage life through ADHD, but it was ugly for a while.
Yeah. I just think it's helpful to know that for people that are listening that are in a relationship or even in a marriage to where one partner or both partners have neurodivergence, you know, that takes, like, you have to really take that into consideration whenever you're trying to work through things.
Yes. You know? Like, now we're finding people who are married to somebody who is on the spectrum. Mm. And they might be high functioning, but they're still on the spectrum. And so that's neurodivergence. And I think the best thing you can do is identify it and get some really good psychoeducation around what it is you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you can't expect somebody whose brain works very differently to think the way that you think and to remember the way that you remember and to process the way that you process.
Yeah. Man, that's good. So we talked about little R's, little ruptures, things that create a disconnection or a break in trust, a feeling of safety, and then also intimacy, closeness. What are some of the big R's?
So some of the big R's are, like I said, we talked about affair. The other one is emotional volatility. That's a big R.
Yeah.
So when you're married to somebody who is physically abusive, huge, big, fat, capital R. But even also somebody who's just really volatile, like you feel like you're getting in trouble a lot.
Hmm.
You know, so... you learn early to hide, to walk on eggshells, but to hide. But when there's a lot of yelling mm-hmm. in a relationship, that's a big rupture.
Yeah. Man, there's like some, what do they call it? Transference?
Are you feeling it, John?
I am a little bit. I was like, man, I remember, you know, being on the receiving end of some of that stuff in the past. And yeah, I felt like I was always getting in trouble. So yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that's tough. Also, somebody who's super controlling, you know, can be a big rupture, depending on the level of control. I mean, you know, it can be a little R or a big R, but that is something you have to deal with. But one thing I don't think we think about as a rupture very much. So if I had a client and I said, what do you think is more abusive or more damaging or more toxic? Is it to yell and scream, or is it to completely ignore your partner? What would you get? What would you guess?
Oh my gosh. I don't know. I kind of want to take the cop out answer and say both of them are equally trash.
Well, they both are trash. They both are trash. But the thing about the explosive part, it's usually, they're both pretty toxic. I don't think it's a fair question to say which is worse, but the explosiveness is often quick. It's often, you know, big, huge blow up, and then it's over and everybody breathes a sigh of relief until the next explosion. You can often even usually predict them. The thing about the ignoring or stonewalling is it can last for hours, days, weeks, months.
And that's after a rupture, or is that just, that's just how? That,
well, yeah, or the rupture, right? So I had a client one time, and years and years ago, and he just ignored his spouse, just ignored. He'd get frustrated with her and be upset by something she did or didn't do, and he just wouldn't talk to her.
Gosh.
Wouldn't look at her. Wouldn't talk to her.
That seems so bizarre.
But you know, it's really common. And what's interesting is they will be, in my experience, people will cop to that way sooner than they will, I'm a rageaholic who is a total, you know, jerk to be around. They will admit, they're like, you know, they'll hide that, but they'll tell me flat out, oh yeah, I didn't talk to him for days, or I didn't talk to him for weeks.
That's not okay. And just so that we're clear, for the people that are listening, like, we're not talking about an agreed upon time where if there's a rupture, we take specific amount of time agreed upon to not say anything out of anger, you know, to make sure that we don't
say something. No, I'm talking about pouting.
We're talking about somebody who's using it.
Yes, I'm talking about ignoring. I'm talking about intentionally trying to let your spouse know that you are put out with them, but not finding the words to actually have the conversation.
Man, I think the first word that came to mind was disgust.
Oh, that makes you have disgust about people that do that?
No, like whenever somebody just looks at you and not even say anything to you, in my mind, I think that that person feels disgust or contempt for their partner. And so maybe, I don't know if this is the right way to use this. It's like a one-up type of behavior.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, for sure. It's a one-up type of behavior, but it's also, it is contemptuous, and it's so irresponsible. It's so relationally irresponsible.
Talk about that.
I mean, we're in each other's care, right? I mean, we say that a lot. We're in each other's care, and you are ignoring someone. Now, I've had people who's like, what's the big deal? Because maybe they were ignored. Maybe that's how the conflict was handled in their house growing up. Or they would think, I mean, I've heard of people oftentimes say, I just didn't want to be a yeller, and I don't know any other way to deal with my anger or disgust or contempt or disappointment or whatever. And so they turn it inward like that. But it's so incredibly damaging to the person and to the relationship that we've got to learn how to show up differently. We've got to learn how to show up and have tough conversations.
Yeah. And I would even add, it's not just destructive to the relationship or to your partner, but it also does nothing to help you as a person. Mm-hmm. Like, you shutting off someone else, in a dynamic where you're needed and are necessary, like, doesn't help you either, like, as a person.
No, no, it doesn't help you either as a person. There's a, I get clients to watch this a lot. If you Google still face experiment.
Okay.
STILL, still face experiment. You'll see, it was Ed Tronick. He's a doctor. He did a bunch of research on babies and attachment and how people respond to each other. And he did this, he did this experiment where he put a baby in a high chair. It sounds, it's hard to watch, actually.
I bet.
And the mother is in front of the baby and is playing with the baby, engaging with the baby, and the baby is cooing and laughing and pointing, and the mother's pointing and she's doing the baby talk and, oh, how sweet you are. And all of a sudden the mother turns her face and all she does is turn back toward the baby, and it's a still expression, still face, still expression. The mother isn't looking mean and she isn't looking happy, and she's just staring blankly at the child. And it is not just seconds before the child starts to get emotionally activated. They will, it was just this little baby. Like, I think the baby was like a year or less, much less, didn't have words. And the baby was trying to get the mom's attention. And she was like, ah! And the mother just kept that still face. And it wasn't long before the child was screaming.
Wow.
And I use that to show couples who cut each other off like that, to show them that we're wired, I say this a lot, we're wired for connection. And when there's not this give or take, when we don't have the safety of this person, our person, to help co-regulate us, we can get very dysregulated very quickly. It's extremely painful.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That kind of reminds me of another experiment. I'm pretty sure that you've heard of it, where they kind of labeled it failure to launch, where if there was an orphanage that was used for an experiment, and they experimented with babies that did not have any interaction with their caretaker, and found that babies that had more interaction with their caretakers as an infant, like the laughing and smiling and engaging, mm-hmm. that baby was able to grow up in quote unquote, you know, normal human growth. But babies that did not, unfortunately passed away.
Yeah. Yeah. They've done a lot of study with children in orphanages in other countries, especially. And
yeah.
And how, you know, human development comes from that. And so we know that ignoring our partner,
yep.
not being a presence, a co-regulating force or whatever, is extremely painful, emotionally, psychologically, physically painful.
Yeah.
And so it's one of the cruelest things you can do.
Yeah. Even if we don't maybe scream like a baby, I mean, some of us do, but in that moment, even if we don't express a frustration, like, we know just from being humans that there's a frustration that's going on inside that we are not realizing the impact of, from the person that's receiving and the person that's giving that kind of behavior.
Right. And I keep wondering so much. It's like, what is so hard about saying to someone, I'm hurt, I'm mad, I feel wounded, I feel disappointed, I feel any number of these things that's going on between us, let's have a conversation about it.
That would be a very vulnerable thing to do. And I don't know if people have had the space for that growing up in the past, have been shown that, have experienced that enough for them to even be brave enough to do that.
I know. I mean, that's why we're always going to have a job, unfortunately. But it's our job is to teach clients how to show up and have those tough conversations and how to be more relational. I mean, that's what it is, growing ourselves up to be in relationship.
Yeah, because we still have a choice. Like, even if we didn't experience that in the past, like, you know, we know that the brain is still moldable. And we can change based off our decisions and committing to a different kind of behavior, a different kind of response.
That's right. Yes. And I have high hopes. I mean, the clients that we work with, we see them improve and we see them get better. There's, I mean, I don't know why it's so hard for some people, but I do know why. I mean, it's safety that was never created for them. Vulnerability requires safety. And the way we're raised teaches us a lot about what's safe and what isn't safe.
Yeah. As we end, would you be up for sharing how someone can begin to repair?
Maybe. Oh yeah. I mean, we're going to do a whole podcast on how to begin to repair. I will tell you this, the very first order of business for repairing is you've got to get to the part of you that wants to repair. Because if you think about that for a minute, if you're activated, if you're angry, if you're hurt, you're disappointed, you're not in the head space and heart space to want to repair. You want to be right. You want your partner to know how hurt you are. You might want to be punitive, but that's not a place for repair. So let's just tease that out.
Yeah, I was going to say, man.
Talk more about that later.
It's like, do you even want to? Do you even want to? But that's really the first step, is to figure out if you really want to. All right, guys, that wraps it up for us today. We had a really good conversation with Kim about ruptures, small ruptures, larger ruptures, and even how we respond in them. And I hope that you guys were encouraged today that, you know, we have the decision to make on how we show up for our partners, even when things are going south. So I hope that you guys enjoyed today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of the Marriage Savvy Podcast, where being savvy about your marriage could help you not get finessed by it. I'm your co-host, John Bautista. Y'all stay savvy out there, and we'll see you on the next episode. Peace.